So we still have a deficit. It's just a little bit smaller. You know, maybe $300 to $500 million is what we need to cover after the use of the permanent fund.
The state's economic forecast is a little bit better than last year. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 16th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, Bethel's new representative brings legislative staffers home to listen to local issues.
Living without public safety, it's a scenario where we feel like we're America's forgotten.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Higher oil prices will mean more revenue for the state government. That's the upshot from a new state forecast released today. In December, the Alaska Department of Revenue predicted the price of oil would be $56 per barrel this year. This new forecast says it will be $5 higher at $61 per barrel and go up even more next year. Even at that price, the state will still have a gap of more than $2 billion between what it spends and what it raises. And the state doesn't have that much money in the savings account it's used in the past. State Division of Taxation Director Ken Alper says the state will have to draw from the Alaska Permanent Fund earnings, but that draw won't be enough to close the gap.
So we still have a deficit. It's just a little bit smaller. You know, maybe $300 to $500 million is what we need to cover after the use of the permanent fund.
Lawmakers from the two majorities in the legislature had different responses to the news. Anchorage Democratic Representative Les Guerra says higher oil prices don't reduce the need for a long-term plan for the state budget that includes new revenue. Guerra supports higher oil and gas taxes.
The budget gap is phenomenal, and we will be out of savings within a year if this legislature does not get its act together to put together a budget plan that requires maybe oil companies to chip in. Oil companies that are now paying no production taxes whatsoever. Can we afford to do that when the state is rearranging the chairs in the Titanic?
Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon responded to Guerra's call for higher oil taxes.
Well, I think that's shocking. First of all, industry, as well as the state, has suffered through losses per se in investment dollars. And industry specifically has been bleeding and not receiving profits.
McKinnon says the improved forecast supports the Senate's position to pass a plan to draw from permanent fund earnings now and to consider any remaining spending gap in the future. In a place like the Alaska Arctic, local issues often unfold on a national or even international scale. Oil companies, the state, the federal government, environmental groups, they all have something that they want to see happen there. So how do the wants of local people get heard? And who gets to speak for them? From Alaska's Energy Desk, Ravenna Koenig has this report on an organization that says the Inupiat of the North Slope will be stronger if they speak as one.
The group is called Voice of the Arctic Inupiat, or VOICE, and their goal is to bring together the leaders of the region to weigh in on policies that affect their communities.
Whether it's development, whether it's subsistence rights, we want to be heard in our fashion, in our manner. Not someone who lives in Washington, D.C. telling us what's right and what's wrong for us.
This clip is from a promotional video on Voice's website featuring John Hobson Jr., the mayor of the village of Wainwright. Leaders like Hobson from the local governments, tribal councils, and Native corporations say they kept hearing outsiders, like politicians in D.C. and environmental groups, talking on a national stage about their local issues. And some of those leaders felt that their group would be better heard on that national stage if they unified.
To allow us, as many different individual organizations with unique purposes and goals, to come together to finally speak with one voice.
That's Voice Chairman Rex Rock Sr. talking about the organization at an industry conference last November. Since Voice was launched in 2015, it's invited 28 leadership organizations from across the North Slope to become members. 20 have accepted. The city of Utqiagvik is a member, and the mayor, Fanny Suvlu, represents the city at Voice meetings. She says that hard conversations sometimes happen around the table. Some policies affect certain parts of the North Slope differently than others, and not everyone agrees. She likes that part of it, hearing what other leaders are thinking.
You know, I know what's happening with Anwar, but I don't know how it's affecting the people at home in Anwar. Or, you know, I know that we have development at Alpine and real close to Nuxit, but I don't see the everyday effects of that.
But Mayor Suvlu says that in this regard, the organization still hasn't reached its full potential. That's because, despite the emphasis on unity, there are still some big gaps in the membership. For example, there's currently no representation from the village of Nuiqsut, which is one of the places on the North Slope most directly impacted by development. Also missing is the regional tribal government, the group that the federal government has to consult with before taking any action in the region. George Edwardson is president of that group.
We don't want to weaken our ability to speak and stand and to join the voice. We would have to.
To be clear, Edwardson doesn't have a problem with the fact that these other leadership groups have teamed up as voice. He just thinks that remaining separate from the organization will give his group the independence it needs to counterbalance some of the others in the region, like the local corporations.
They're doing what they're designed to do, make money. And as a regional tribal government, my job is to protect the ecosystem and the people and the culture.
One of Edwardson's group's big issues is offshore drilling. He says they're completely opposed. But Voice has decided not to take a position on offshore development, even though they've said they want several critical subsistence areas to be off limits. And this gets at the real question facing leaders on the North Slope. Do they join together, hash out their differences, and try to speak to issues with one voice, like Mayor Suvlu and the members of Voice of the Arctic Inupiat are suggesting?
I definitely think it's possible to have a unified voice, but it's never going to be truly unified unless all entities that were invited to the table take advantage of it.
Or are their constituents better served by a chorus of distinct ones, like George Edwardson and his group?
So when the community has issues, we'll stand up with them. Sometimes the issues might be against one of the organizations in Voice of the Arctic. Sometimes we internally fight each other. That's no problem. That's how, you know, democracy works. Everybody has his voice.
Voice of the Arctic Inupiat says it respects the regional tribal government's decision not to become a member, and that the door is always open for the groups that have been invited to join. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Utqiagvik.
Sponsors of a controversial ballot initiative that aims to strengthen state law protecting salmon habitat says it's been certified by the Alaska Division of Elections. The Yes for Salmon initiative reports it received close to 42,000 signatures. That's significantly more than was required. The Yes for Salmon initiative could appear on the ballot either during the primary election in August or the general election in November, depending on whether the legislature ends its session on time. But a vote on the issue still isn't guaranteed. The state claims the ballot initiative is unconstitutional and is challenging it in court. If the Alaska Supreme Court rules in the state's favor, Yes for Salmon won't be on the ballot. Many of the state's biggest mining and oil companies oppose the initiative, saying it threatens the viability of future projects like the Donlin Mine. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a mixed martial arts titan returns to Sitka to train locals.
As far as like getting pure, accurate training, this is the closest thing that we can get without actually going to Brazil.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Subsistence Board is accepting applications through February 2nd to fill seats on the 10 Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Councils meet at least twice a year and provide critical advice to the board on subsistence management issues. Individuals may apply or nominate someone for membership. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message is sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
A newly published poll found more than half of Juno respondents support the stalled Juno Access Project. The group that helped finance the survey says it shows public opinion is shifting in favor of building the road. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
The McDowell Group poll found 54% said they support extending Juno's road north of the Katsahin River, where a ferry would connect to Skagway. 39% said they were opposed to the plan, known as Juno Access Project. The survey was jointly financed by the City and Borough of Juno and First Things First Alaska Foundation, a pro-development group. Pollsters asked 402 people on landlines and cell phones their positions on transportation issues over a single week in January. Executive Director Denny DeWitt, who also lobbies for small business groups and AAA, said the results released Thursday should be instructive to political leaders.
This is the best data set we've ever had. And I think that it's something that ought to be looked at and thought about very seriously by those folks who are trying to represent all the people in Juneau.
The road project has been perennially divisive within Juneau and is also more widely opposed in Skagway and Haines. The Juneau Assembly's $20,000 appropriation for the survey was approved on a 63 vote late last year. The vote was along the same lines of a controversial resolution in support of the road. DeWitt brushed off opposition. He said the data speaks for itself.
I don't have a great need to have 100% support before we move ahead in our community.
But a road project isn't going to happen anytime soon. Governor Bill Walker polled his administration's support for the project in 2016. Earlier this week, a House budget amendment proposed keeping the $21 million budgeted toward the project locked in state coffers. Juneau's House delegation's two votes in opposition were critical to its failure. Here's Representative Sam Keto III, a Democrat, speaking Monday on the House floor. He noted the project isn't in the state's transportation plan.
And putting $21 million back into an account that cannot be expended until the project is in our statewide transportation improvement program, until the project is moving forward and under construction, that money will be sitting there waiting and not spent.
The amendment failed 19-20. Back to the poll. Of those opposed to the Juno Access Project, about 26% said they'd be more likely to support it if the road went to Skagway. DeWitt said the poll shows the road is finding favor in the capital city. About 54% said the current state ferry service is adequate for Juno, and nearly 80% supported a second crossing over Gastineau Channel to connect the Mendenhall Valley with North Douglas Island. In Juno, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Representative Tiffany Zulkuski is flying back to Bethel for the Chamai Festival this weekend, and she's bringing staffers from the governor's office with her. At a meeting called a listening session this Saturday evening, the group will be discussing alcohol's effect on villages in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region. The meeting is a direct response to resolutions issued by the villages of Nibuskiak and Marshall, which urged the governor to declare a state of emergency in the communities last week. KYUK's Teresa Katsarilis has more.
The delegation arriving in Bethel is something of a task force drawn from the Walker administration's staff. Walt Monaghan, the commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, will be there. Representatives from the Attorney General and Lieutenant Governor's offices will be there, too. They're attending a community listening session at Bethel's High School tonight, where they'll discuss the impact of Bethel's liquor store on surrounding communities. Representative Zulkuski organized the meeting in response to resolutions issued by two village tribal councils last week, both of which addressed the YK Delta's lack of public safety. In Nipaskiak, tribal council members claim that Bethel's liquor store led to a sharp increase in alcohol-related deaths in their village.
We've seen so many deaths, countless already.
That's Sharon Williams, Nipaskiak's tribal administrator. In Marshall, tribal council members say they've seen a spike in alcohol-related incidents, too, and the village is struggling to handle it. With the exception of occasional trooper visits, Marshall has no law enforcement. According to Marshall tribal administrator Nick Andrew Jr., that makes coping with the alcohol and opioid epidemics next to impossible.
Living without public safety in America, mind you, basically, you know, it's a scenario where we feel like we're America's forgotten.
Both villages urged Governor Walker to intervene. Tiffany Zelkowski's listening session on the impact of Bethel's liquor store on the YK Delta is open to the public. It's happening at Bethel's High School in room C22, beginning at 5:30 p.m. In Bethel, I'm Teresa Kotsubilis.
For the first time ever, this year's Chamai Dance Festival will have traditional Yupik talking and healing circles for men and for women on opening day. KYUK's Christine Trudeau reports the space will be ready tonight at Bethel Regional High School at 6 p.m.
Several years ago, the First Alaskans Institute decided to tap into cultural strengths and traditions by bringing back the use of the Gusgiuk annually at the statewide Elders and Youth Conference that precedes the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention. Now this custom is being taken back to the YK Delta, where it originated.
So we brought back the Gusgiuk, which is the men's house, and we also brought in with that women's house. It's a chance for our young people to really sit and listen and learn from the guidance of our elders.
That's First Alaskans Policy Center Director, Andrea Sanders.
My Yupik name is Agashak.
What is talked about in the Gusgiuk? Sanders says that's determined by participants. Everyone pays attention, and each person in turn speaks. Sanders will host the Women's House with Institute CEO Liz Medicine Crow and staffer Angela Gonzalez. Hosting the Men's House will be Samuel Johns and Torin Jacobs of Bethel.
One of the things that the Men's House has done in the past is to lay everything out, to teach the boys how to be men, not just as hunters, not just as fathers, but as husbands, as lovers, as educators, as everything that you can possibly think of to make a human being proper.
Jacobs describes his experience as strengthening, and Andrea Sanders speaks of interconnectedness that she hopes young people will be able to feel as Chamai gets underway.
There's a reason that we're still here, that we still dance, that we still gather, that we still celebrate our traditions. And that if our youth are able to tap into that inner strength and that inner spirit, that they will feel that connection, that they will feel that they're part of something really powerful that is healing, that is strength, that is love. I hope they'll feel that if they join us in the Gusgiuk.
That starts tonight at 6 p.m. at Bethel Regional High School in classrooms C22 and C23, open for all to attend. In Bethel, I'm Christine Trudeau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, 59 pounds of power. In the world of martial arts, the name Gracie is a major heavyweight. The Gracie family is synonymous with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and brought the sport to the United States over 40 years ago. KCAW's Emily Kwong got to see their fighting technique up close when a student of the Gracie family brought his teachings from Brazil to a local gym in Sitka.
In a brightly lit room, a dozen Sitkins donning belted robes are in a low lunge. They drag their back legs behind them, noses practically grazing the floor as they slither across. It looks exhausting, and I wonder, doesn't a good fighter stay off the mat? But the floor is actually one of your greatest allies in the world of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Now, using the leg that is up, I'm going to lift my hips a little bit, and I'm going to push my hips up.
Eduardo Roca demonstrates. He's not a big guy, but tough. And a total stickler when it comes to form. He shows his students the right way to move, to grip, If fighting takes maturity, then he compares his students to toddlers, just learning how to crawl.
Still crawling. they have a long, long road to go.
And some are just kids. Cadence LaRose is here with her older brother, Riot. She boasts that even at 59 pounds, jiu-jitsu technique makes her a fearsome opponent.
I've taken him down and pinned him.
I pinned you.
I pinned you.
We're both good.
Yeah. Ish.
Core to the philosophy of jiu-jitsu is that weight class doesn't matter. A smaller person can take on a bigger person and win. That happened back in 1993. When Hoyce Gracie defeated seven other competitors with more physical strength than him using a unique style of fighting his family developed in Brazil.
And LeBron has his chin down.
These Gracies are anacondas. It's over.
I'm talking, of course, about the first ever Ultimate Fighting Championship, or UFC.
That is the power of jiu-jitsu in action. Simply incredible.
That's a clip of that famous fight, which helped catapult Brazilian jiu-jitsu to international fame. Roca brings it up in class.
Skinny guy, look like a lawyer, beat everyone, okay?
Roca trained with the Gracies as a young man in Rio de Janeiro. He's now a fourth-degree black belt and was the first person outside the family to get permission to open a gym in the United States. One of his students later moved back to Sitka, and that's why Roca is teaching a weekend class at this gym. Caleb Storm Harris can scarcely believe his luck.
As far as like getting pure, accurate training, this is the closest thing that we can get without actually going to Brazil.
4 months ago, Harris couldn't touch his toes. Now he's here at the Hames Center at 5:30 in the morning, 5 days a week. He considers jiu-jitsu a form of mindfulness practice.
You know, the world's really, really busy, and you can't be anywhere else if someone's on top of you trying to get at you. And then you learn how to be wherever you are.
Growing up in Rio, Roca says he was a shy kid, insecure, afraid of a lot.
We have only 5 channels on TV, no video game. You have to go out to the streets to play. Anyway, every time I go out to play, the other kids beat me. And then when I turned 14, I decided, you know what, this is going to end.
A poster of the founding father of the sport, Helio Gracie, hangs on the gym wall above us. That was Roca's first teacher. And his lessons have gotten him through the stress of the past few years, leaving Brazil, his marriage ending, and opening his own business.
All these things happened in my life. I have to live here for 5 years by myself, doing with a different language, different culture, different people, away from my family, away from my country, away from everything. I know for sure, because jiu-jitsu training my mind and my heart to support that kind of pressure. You have to really break your body in 1,000 pieces and rebuild piece by piece. It's really difficult, but once you're able to do that, we're going to reborn a new person.
If you're in a fight, he tells me, and you don't know what you're doing, you have to know how to fall. It's one of many lessons of jiu-jitsu that readily translates beyond the mat. But spend some time with Roca and you'll realize that putting them into practice is the work of a lifetime. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Fanny Akpik in Utqiagvik. Akpik is the coordinator of Inupiaq education at the North Slope Borough.
I held my father's hand and he made me promise that I will graduate from my high school and I'm going to go into college and come back and contribute to our society here. I did drop out first 3 months after he passed, but it was a caring teacher named Mrs. Griffin that she was always coming over to visit too and help me, you know, with things around the house. Anyway, if it hadn't been for her, I would have been a dropout. I'm grateful that I kept my promise with my father. Even though no one came to my high school graduation, I felt my father's presence. He made me believe that he'll always be with me in spirit. And so I, to this day, I believe that. I managed to graduate from high school, but today I realize that my learning at that time was to colonize me. And I've always felt mixed up, not the true me when I lived the white man's way of life, Western way of life. When they started the bilingual programs in mid-70s, I was just a measly teacher aide in a special ed classroom, and I enjoyed it because I was helping these children that had emotional and mental problems, and they were of my people. Someday I'd like to see our own Inupiaq school, teaching, you know, everything that I was taught as from an infant until I went into high school.
Fanny Akpik lives in Utqiagvik. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emily Kwong, Ravenna Koenig, and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you miss any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We'd reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Teresa Kotsarilis and Christine Trudeau in Bethel, and Ravenna Koenig in Utqiagvik. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Ann Hillman. Have a fantastic weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile services to help Alaskans and their businesses bank on the go. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
And by Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
The University of Alaska Anchorage is investing in Alaska by equipping students with the knowledge and tools for academic success. These students will go on to be the doctors, nurses, teachers, engineers, and artists of Alaska who shape the future of the state by bringing new solutions, inventions, and ideas to the table. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More information at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA.
Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.